Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolford. Today we're focusing on outdoor activities in town. There's always a lot to do in Anchorage in the summer. My first interview is with an 11-year-old girl and her mother who made a huge change in our city. When Anna Bolts was a toddler, her mother Leah realized the city's playgrounds, although meeting the law, were not truly accessible to a child like her who uses a wheelchair. 9 years later, Anchorage has a dozen inclusive playgrounds with facilities that invite and engage people of every ability. They happen to be more colorful, exciting, and fun as well. Later in the show, we'll hear from a disabled adult athlete who we've had on the show before, Ira Edwards, talking about his preparation for the Boston Marathon by hand cycle. And we'll finish with an interview on outdoor activities related to the Anchorage Museum. Please stick with us. Well, right now I have a guest in the studio to talk about a subject that we haven't brought up before, and it's about making sure that everybody can enjoy outdoor facilities, enjoy playgrounds. And her name is Anna Bolts, and she's 11 years old, and you're going into sixth grade, is that right?
Yep.
At which school?
Huffman Elementary.
All right. So, Anna, our listeners can't see you, but you're in a wheelchair today, and you have a disability, right? So what is it? It's spina bifida, and I don't know what it makes it so it's hard for you to get around?
Yeah.
Okay. So how did that affect you at school when you were trying to go out in recess? I mean, what problems did that create for you?
Well, the playground isn't very accessible, and there's, like, really hard shredded rubber to go in to roll around in. And when I was really little, I couldn't even push myself through it, and now I can.
Okay. And I think that people like thought that that shredded rubber was making it helpful for kids with disabilities, but it's like hard to get through. And then it's also got like a piece of wood around it, right? So you can't get over that with a wheelchair.
Well, there's a ramp.
Oh, okay. So now basically, did that mean there was just no equipment that you could play on when you were a little kid at Huffman?
Yeah. But last year I had the principal lower a swing for me, but I don't really need that anymore. So
you went in and talked to the principal and said this needs to be, you know, this isn't fair. You need to have something to be able to do out there.
Yeah.
All right. Good for you. So Anna's mom is here. Leah Bolts, and I don't know if you were inspired by Anna to do something about this, but it sounds like this concern of playgrounds that are supposedly accessible, I mean, they meet the law, right, really not being accessible. And how did you get involved in doing something about that?
Well, you never really think about accessible things or inaccessible things until you're forced to every day, and so Anna definitely was the inspiration for that.
Yeah.
I was kind of complaining with a couple of other moms at Anna's physical therapy one day about not having any facilities for our kids to play, any accessible facilities. And, you know, and like true Alaskans, we decided we're not just going to sit around and complain about it. We're going to do something about it so our kids and other kids have a place to play.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would think that would be, disability is just part of life, right? But it also seems like pretty unfair that your daughter is unable to play in the playground. I mean, it seems like it would make you kind of mad.
Yeah, it's frustrating for sure.
Yeah.
So, yep.
So did you, how did you find out that there was another way out there? Like, did you go online and search? Or how did you find out that there was other equipment that would work better?
You know, I think we just made the assumption that there had to be a better way.
Okay.
I don't actually remember thinking, oh, this would be great. I remember just thinking we need to find a way to make this work.
I see.
And our first thought was to go around and take an inventory of the playgrounds and see which ones were accessible, which ones weren't, and raise some grassroots funds to maybe purchase some equipment that was more accessible or purchase some things that would help.
Sort of bake sale kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, we had no idea how we were going to do
right.
it.
So then you kind of had a breakthrough and when you met Beth.
Yep, we did. We first discovered an organization called Boundless Playgrounds that was doing accessible, fully accessible playgrounds in the lower 48. And they had a certification system that rated playgrounds and helped design them for kids of all ages and abilities. And at about that same time, we happened to go to a Park Foundation meeting, and I don't even remember what the subject of it was, but we introduced ourselves to Beth and said, hey, this is what we're trying to do. And it was just a happy accident, and they were working on the master plan for Cuddy Midtown Family Park. And
yeah, perfect opportunity for me to introduce my third guest, Beth Nordland, who's the executive director of the Anchorage Park Foundation. And Beth, I'm curious, like when you met Leah and heard about Anna's troubles and the troubles of these other kids, was that an eye-opener for you? Because I kind of never knew it was a problem. I thought, like, oh, Americans with Disabilities Act, that's been taken care of.
Yeah, I knew all the playgrounds in Anchorage would have met the ADA certification. That's the law. Mm-hmm. But it was at that moment that we did a little research and found out not only were there no inclusive or boundless playgrounds in Anchorage, but there weren't any in Alaska.
Wow.
So we knew we had our work cut out for us.
So let's do some definitions here. So ADA is the Americans with Disabilities Act. That's the law. So playgrounds, other public facilities have to be accessible. But then that's defined at a level which for a lot of kids sounds like it's really not accessible. Is that true? Or how would you, and then, so there's a higher level. So
right.
Explain the different definitions.
I mean, I think just as Anna was telling you before, you can't really see kids out there pushing their wheelchairs through the rubber or the shredded the mulch.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really look that accessible when you're watching kids play, and in fact, there are some stories of Anna sitting on the sidelines of play that are tearjerkers. So you just think that through. But inclusive play is a step beyond ADA accessible, right? And hopefully the definition of inclusive play will grow and grow. Our idea is that all kids have access and opportunity to be participating in play in those play spaces.
Mm-hmm. And so, and we visited a playground together yesterday, and it wasn't like you could do anything in that playground, right? But there was plenty that you could do. So it's not like all of the equipment is being made so every piece of equipment can be usable by every person, right? Beth, I mean, is that so inclusive means there's something there for everybody to have fun.
Right, and yeah. Opportunity to interact with the other kids and have maybe creative play moments. There's a lot of ground level play. So, Leah, you know more about the statistics than I do, but it's something, few of the disabilities that kids are out there experiencing are mobility, right? That's
yeah,
a small percentage.
1-2% of children, based on a national study, have a mobility-related disability, so in a wheelchair or something like that. And
there's a lot
the
we
rest
can do with playgrounds.
Are other things. Mm. Maybe those invisible disabilities or, you know, sensory processing type things.
Yeah,
or
autism
or,
spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So how would a playground be adapted for those things?
Well, there's a lot of different features. There's so much to learn. For sensory disorders, I've seen a variety of play spaces where it's a bit of you can create a hidey hole or a place for people to take a little break, time out, and get a break from the over-sensory stimulation.
Oh my gosh, so I think as a playground, like you want everything to be as like wild and bright as possible, but for some kids, it's the opposite. They'd like to have like a little respite.
Yeah. Right.
Neat.
The musical instruments provide a lot of vibration, so for those that are hearing impaired, they can even feel the vibration. So
right.
That's an
so
interesting
at the, so
thing.
So at the South Anchorage Park on Clatt Road, we were playing with those yesterday, and I was like wanting to, I mean, if I had a kid there, I would be playing with those. So they're big like tubes and discs that you can hit with a mallet. and hear weird, interesting sounds.
Yeah, they're lovely tones, actually.
Yeah, they're really, mm-hmm. and they're kind of beautiful and weird. And it seems like anybody would want to play with those. And there would be no one who couldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Those roller slides provide some sensory stimulation, which are said to be inclusive.
So the roller slide is like a slide, instead of just sliding on a flat, on a surface, you're kind of rolling down on a series of rollers that kind of bump you along.
It's very stimulating, and fun. And you can see kids going down backwards and frontwards.
Yeah, I could see that was really popular.
I've been down with Anna. That's a fun one.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Do you like that one, Anna?
Yeah.
There are different kinds of swings that might be able to accommodate several kids, or maybe a kid getting transferred from a wheelchair. Those oodle swings.
Yeah.
And so we like those. You like those, Anna?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that with friends. So that's another way to involve other kids. But I think some of the things we've seen about the surfacing that can include everyone is that it even takes the parents away from the edge of the pea gravel playground and pulls you in closer, so you're actually experiencing some of the play.
Yeah, I was noticing that at the playground, that it was much more everybody sort of in around everybody else. The surface that's the soft surface people fall on is it's kind of like an astroturf with some kind of sand or buffer underneath it. So it doesn't seem like a barrier for people to walk on or to go into. Yeah.
Yeah, we've gone through some changes with what we
figuring it out
prefer
to do it.
With the surface, but we like the astroturf right now, yeah.
And then the slide was something where it's built into a mound of grass with a ramp on the backside, so it's not a ladder you have to climb up, and it's actually much more aesthetic, too. I mean, it really is a pretty park.
Well, you didn't see the, there is a path that goes mm-hmm. all the way up that little hill, so you don't have to get up the front way, but a lot of kids are walking up that slide the front way.
Yeah,
that looks very fun, too.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But what I think, I mean, all kids are different. There's a lot of climbing and amazing fun features at playgrounds, but I do like to see playgrounds that have some kind of an imaginative play component, mm-hmm. and everyone can be involved in dreaming that you are a pirate or going to the moon or that you're interacting with a very large polar bear. So I think creative play is something that you that isn't necessarily what you think about for playgrounds, certainly not for the big climbers, but we're working to make sure that our playgrounds have something for everyone.
Yeah, if you haven't been to a playground, check out one of the new playgrounds that has been created, and we're going to make sure we have that on our website, or at least linked from our website at outdoorexplorer.org, so you can get out to one of these playgrounds. They're all over town now and are increasing, and they're beautiful, and they're so much different, and you kind of look at them and think, wow, why wasn't it always like that? Why couldn't it be like that when I was a kid?
We have 12 now, and we are building 5 this summer.
Yeah, and I want to get into that, but I want to make sure everybody knows it's Outdoor Explorer. I have Beth Nordland, who's the executive director of the Anchorage Parks Foundation, and Leah and Anna Boltz, who have worked to make sure that there are inclusive playgrounds that everybody can enjoy. And Leah is a mom, and Anna is a kid who's a student at Huffman Elementary. So I'm curious, Anna, have you been out to try a bunch of these different playgrounds? Or, I mean, is there particular places that you like to go best?
Well, my favorite is Cuddy Park, because there's ramps that you can, that you can go on, and most of them don't really have ramps.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, and that one's really pretty, too, right? I mean, I've been by it on my bike, and I've noticed that, it's really looks nice in the park. It's a beautiful park. Yeah. So was that the first one that you guys were involved with, Leah?
That was the first one. Yep. Yep.
That took us a few years.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's located behind the Lusac Library, sort of in that, it's that sort of midtown area for people who aren't totally familiar with it. Hopefully everybody is by now. It's where the speed skating oval was.
Yep. Right. Yep.
So Leah, when you first, you were telling sort of the chronology here when you got hooked up with the Parks Foundation, sort of, You've gone on to do more. You were mentioning that you've been to look at playground factories, you mm-hmm. know, and really research this. Well, yeah. Tell us a little bit more about your involvement.
Well, when we first started, you know, all three of us moms had children who had disabilities that were primarily mobility related. So there were two of us with children with spina bifida, and so it was really about that basic access at first, and like Beth was saying, really removing the barriers, because if there is a barrier anywhere on the playground, it's a non-starter. If Anna couldn't even get to the playground to interact with her kids or be there with them, that was really the first thing that we wanted to address. And so Parks and Rec has done an amazing job of researching different types of surfacing. You'll see at Cuddy Park, there's a what's called poured in place, and it's a rubberized surfacing, which is really fun to bounce on if you're even if you're an adult. and then the turf. And so that was really the first thing that we focused on, is making sure kids could get there. Mm-hmm. But again, then I realized, you know, my child is in the 1-2% of kids with a disability. And so started out as a selfish thing. Mm-hmm. but then it wasn't selfish anymore. It was, let's look at other kids and what their needs are. Kids with vision impairments or hearing impairments or on the autism spectrum, what is it that those kids need to be able to have fun on a playground and to play and still make it challenging and fun? One of the things that we really tried to do was make sure that inclusive was inclusive. It wasn't, here's a section that's accessible for kids in a wheelchair, and then here's the rest of the playground able-bodied children.
Right.
Yeah. So it's all, you'll notice, especially South Anchorage Sports Park is a good example of that, where you have the huge climbing structure in the middle, and everything is all together. So kids of all abilities play all together.
So it's about integration as well as just including a sort of being...
Absolutely.
Learning to play with different kinds of people.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we've been to national conferences and playground manufacturing plants, and we've visited some of the nation's top inclusive playgrounds. Some really innovative places, and are bringing those things back to Alaska and incorporating those into what we're doing here.
So this wasn't like the kind of thing where you can go to the library and get a book about playgrounds and then you just sort of like, this is how you do it. This is something more of a deal where you have to go out and find what other people are doing and sort of bring it in because it's so new.
Yep. And it's also, you know, you'll notice that the playgrounds in Anchorage, the Park Foundation and Parks and Rec and the community or the neighborhoods actually have done a great job of making each one of those playgrounds different and unique to each neighborhood. It's not prescriptive. Mm-hmm. And Parks and Rec, I know, is constantly evolving their designs and working with their design partners and their in-house team to always up the bar. You know, we're never going to be done making it better. So
Anna, did you go on any of these trips to see playgrounds like outside Alaska or to do help with the research?
Well, we went to a playground factory where they make all of the structures and stuff in Minnesota.
Was that kind of fun?
Yeah.
I mean, assuming that's like the kid's dream, is like going to the toy factory, right? Seeing things before everyone else sees them. Did you get to like play with the stuff there?
No.
Oh, just look at it. Okay.
We did tour some playgrounds, and they did let her into the secret skunk works where no one else could see the next year's what was coming out.
I'm not sure how much of an impression it made, but it sounds cool. Yeah. So, Beth, back on the topic that Leah was just talking about, this is not something that where there's a pattern book out there. This is something you're kind of inventing as you go along, right?
Well, we've been working really hard on it, but just kind of locally and, touching base with other experts. But what we were hearing from the playground manufacturers, that it appeared to be that we were just doing great work, and why are we doing such great work when they're not hearing so much from other communities? So we ended up having a young man from UAA do a study, his capstone project from the MPA program, and we learned a lot. There's no national definition of inclusive play. Other communities are doing inclusive playgrounds, but it appears they're doing, you know, like a big project, maybe one or two big projects, but they don't appear to have a consistent movement of community advocates that are working towards inclusive playgrounds in all their facilities. And
isn't that something that's your goal here, is that all of the playgrounds be inclusive?
Well, we figure each playground that we pull out and renovate, we want to make it inclusive. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that eventually they will, you'll work your way through, because they have to be renovated periodically, right?
Yeah, and the lifespan of a playground shouldn't be as long as it probably is in this city.
Right. So how are you doing this when we're in a time of austerity and we hear constantly about the government not having enough money? You said you've done 12 playgrounds in a pretty short period of time, because Anna's not that old, so this hasn't been going on all that long.
Right. Our first one we built was in 2013.
Yeah, so that's only 5 years ago. And you've already done 12, and you're doing how many more?
Five.
So you're going to have 17. That's a lot. It seems like that would be very expensive. How is this coming together?
Well, at the beginning, we were just putting funds together that we had access to. So private foundations, some state grants. And then in the last couple of years, when we haven't had a capital budget with the state, we've actually been successful with getting inclusive play on the bonds 2 years in a row. Mm. So the voters have actually voted for inclusive playgrounds, which is exciting. So, but the Anchorage Park Foundation continues to work with the Rasmussen Foundation and other funders to bring private dollars to put them together for public improvement projects in parks.
Cool.
The other piece of that, too, is that it doesn't have to necessarily be more expensive. If it's a playground that you're renovating anyway or building new, something we've worked with Parks and Rec on a lot, is it's just, if your priority is to make it inclusive, that's what you do. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be more expensive or cost more money. You're just designing smarter.
It's the new normal.
Right. So... I guess that's probably a lot about the people who are working on it and what they're learning as they go along, because as you're saying that this is a new thing, I mean, it sounds like we're kind of at the front of the nation in terms of doing this many of them. Other places, you say, like, might have one. We already have 12. So is that sort of the idea of how to do it? Is that something that is in the designers, or are you creating a sort of set of standards of this is what it means, at least in Anchorage?
Well, each landscape architect at Anchorage Parks and Recreation has been honing their skills, trying to learn as much as they can, talking to the public, talking to neighbors. We're trying to bring resources to those planners so that they can be exposed to as much knowledge as we can. We're doing a summit. We're doing a training in June for people like us, and then we're going to do a summit in September, which will be statewide for inclusive play. So we're trying to bring information to ourselves.
So this is something that's become much bigger than just sort of like our, you know, little one playground at a time. It's kind of a movement that you're sort of developing and spreading and leading.
Well, the Anchorage Park Foundation doesn't want to do this by itself.
I mean,
we are the community, right? We are trying to build community. We're convening groups, trying to get people together to see, all right, these are the things we say we want to do. Are you with us? What do you want to do? What can you do? One of the exciting things we learned from the capstone that I want to keep going with is that inclusive playgrounds and play spaces, and frankly, any space, can be more inclusive if there is a trained individual there that knows how to include people. Well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the Anchorage Park Foundation, you know, some of the partners, Stone Soup, Ark of Anchorage, you know, Special Olympics, who Challenge Alaska. I mean, these groups in town can be experts on how to be more inclusive. And we want to be able to train parents and families and caregivers to make a playground experience more inclusive. And I mean, we've all been excluded in some way for some reason,
like, right?
In
some point, yeah.
And so you can think about the benefits to society mm-hmm. for including everyone.
Making everyone, and also for kids who don't have a disability being able to play authentically with a kid who does, right? And so the realizing it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. We're not that different.
Right. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about playgrounds that everyone can use and use together. And you were just hearing from Beth Nordland, who's executive director of the Anchorage Park Foundation. Leah Boltz is here. She's a mom who helped get this movement started. And Anna Boltz, who inspired Leah, and she's an 11-year-old at Huffman Elementary. Leah, you made a point to me earlier about the fact that it's not just the kid, but it's also the caregiver who needs to be able to get into the park.
Right, yeah.
Whether that be a grandparent or Anna in the future with her little sister, right?
Yep.
So that she can take her sister to the park.
Yep. Yeah, when we first started this, again, it was, you know, selfish for us, but we started to think about the impacts of doing this. And, you know, Alaska has a huge military population. And so that was really something that we thought about, was when you have a wounded warrior who comes back from battle and is in a wheelchair or experiences some kind of new disability, how do they take their kids to the park?
Wow, and never thought of that.
Yeah, and we never did either. So that became a really big guiding factor too, is you have those parents who have disabilities. You have a lot of grandparents who are caregivers who take care of their grandkids during the day. And you have, you know, the population that we see coming up to Alaska to visit is a lot of elderly. And so these playgrounds really are for everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then for Anna, you know, as she started to get older and a little bit less interested in the playgrounds
right.
than she was before.
I know I'm asking all these questions, but she's in sixth grade, so playgrounds are not like necessarily the top thing in mind, right?
Yep. but now she has a four-month-old baby sister. Now I'm excited about her being able to actually take her little sister to the playground when she gets older and get on there. And as you saw yesterday, she was pushing her in the swing and playing with the musical equipment with her. So
yeah.
It's a whole new era of life.
That's great. So it for you, this sounds like it's probably taken on a lot of your life.
It has.
Are you still super involved with it, or now Beth and the other sort of people who are being paid to work on this are kind of taking it forward?
It's a little of both. You know, mm-hmm. It's been amazing. I just love the Alaska spirit that takes something like this and says, oh, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to take care of our own, and we're going to make sure that we, you know, that we provide recreation to everybody. And so we started this grassroots initiative called Parks for All out of this. But it's really something that it's not a nonprofit right now. It's a grassroots organization.
It's a group. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And it's really been adopted by the Park Foundation, by Parks and Rec, by Rasmussen and other organizations who really want to make this a priority. So it's a little bit of crowdsourcing, kind of, and that's what we want. We want everybody to see the value of inclusivity in the community and incorporate that in whatever they're doing.
So are you looking for more parents with kids who have a disability or disabled folks themselves to be contacting you and working on this?
Absolutely. Yep. We always want input. We always want to make the playgrounds better. And yeah, absolutely.
So is that through your website, Beth, or is it play for ways for people to get in touch?
Yeah. Parks for All has a website.
Oh, you do? Okay. We'll have that at outdoorexplorer.org so folks can find it. Cool.
Yeah, and the Anchorage Park Foundation is pretty deep into the issue.
Right,
we're
quite
happy to be big promoters. And we are going to try to attract people to our Inclusive Play Symposium September 12th and 13th, which is during Design Week.
Oh,
and
neat.
On the designer community is very involved, and it's going to be hosted at the museum. And I think we're going to try to do a StoryCorps type model where we're asking people questions. They're responding to prompts about their own experiences with inclusive play, maybe their play history, play stories, mm-hmm. and see if we can really get some personal, fun, and beautiful stories to fill in what we're talking about.
Neat.
Right? Things that resonate with people.
I bet this is something that designers would just love to be involved in, because it's like cool, interesting, looks neat, and the function and the form are related. So that's all the stuff that designers love, right?
Yeah,
you can see it really light them up.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
There's something for everyone to participate in. It's not all about money.
Right.
I love the fact that the Anchorage Park Foundation can be talking to people about, making contributions, yes, please, mm-hmm. but also getting involved in what your neighborhood wants to see in a park, and also talking to us about what kinds of play equipment is the most fun and inclusive. And I had an experience last week at the new playground at Chaunch New Muldoon. I was there with a neighborhood mother and also a teacher who was experiencing the playground for a first time, and she had a couple of kids with mobility issues in tow. She was near tears for how inclusive
nice.
It is.
That
and
must
she
make
had,
me feel great.
She didn't expect it at all.
Yeah.
We had one of those big hugs on a playground with a stranger.
Neat.
I don't know her name. Hello.
That must you guys all did a great accomplishment. You too, Anna and Leah and Beth. Really, really great this is happening. So, Beth, what's the next step? You're working on five more. Is it going to be just like another half dozen a year? Is that sort of the thought? Or do you have a long-range plan where this goes?
Well, there are 86 playgrounds in Anchorage, and I think each time we touch one, we need to mm-hmm. make it inclusive, as inclusive as we can with the dollars we have available, the new normal.
Right. And does that include the school district?
The school district has their own playgrounds, and Leah can talk more about that.
Is that something you guys have worked on?
We've had several conversations with the school district, and it definitely has been a priority for me because, as we started to do this in the community and started to see what was possible, then we go back to Anna's school playground and see, she can't get through the playground.
Yeah.
So it's kind of starting back at the beginning again. Mm-hmm. So definitely for us, we would love to see schools be adopting this and doing this more, especially when you're building a new school.
When they're building a new school and replacing something.
Yep. One thing we've found is incorporating a lot of these different types of activities and very intentional pieces of playground equipment that stimulate the senses is the classroom actually extends then outside to the playground.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
And so there's a really interesting opportunity to tie that into the educational environment.
Yeah, isn't mm-hmm. that cool? So
one of the five new playgrounds we're doing this year is going to be indoors, the first indoor playground at Fairview Recreation Center. We're really excited
can't
about
wait to
what
see that.
That's going to do for Fairview.
Well, I would like to, we've got a list here, and for listeners who might be thinking, hey, I want to try this out, I think maybe the best thing is just to read through the list as we finish up the interview. Who wants to do, you want to do that, Beth?
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have Balto Sepala Park, Barbara Street Park, Campbell Creek Park, Chaunch New Muldoon Park. Chugach Foothills Park is coming soon in 2018.
Okay.
Cuddy Family Midtown Park, Dave Rose Park, David Green Park, Doldita Park, Fairview Recreation Center coming soon, Frontierland Park coming soon in 2018. Jewel Lake Park coming soon. That's going to be a huge ship, like a pirate ship. I'm so excited.
I was just there this weekend, and there were mobs of people. I mean, these things are going to be so heavily used, right?
And there's a zip line at Jewel Lake, so you should check that out. It should be pretty inclusive. Kincaid Park has one with the moose. Kiwanis Fish Creek Park, South Anchorage Sports Park, Susan Nightingale McKay Park, that's with the Woolly Mammoth.
In Government Hill,
Yeah, and then Whisper Faith Kovach Park is coming soon. That's this summer. That'll be done in July. So
awesome.
A lot of great work
that's
ahead.
That's great. Well, congratulations to all of you, and thanks for being here. Thanks for being here, Anna. All right. Thanks for coming. And Leah, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Anna and Leah Bolt, who have sort of helped pioneer this inclusive playground movement in Anchorage. And Beth Nordland, thanks for picking up the baton and carrying it on. Sounds like we're sort of like a special town and that we're doing this, and that's great.
Yeah. See you out at the playground. And also on your website, we should have some inclusive play dates up there for people to take a look at and make sure that they get out there when there are a lot of people experiencing inclusive play.
We can link to the Anchorage Park Foundation from our site at outdoorexplorer.org. So stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolford. We've talked a lot on the show about disabilities in the outdoors, and one of our best guides on that topic has been Ira Edwards, who remains a remarkable Alaska outdoorsman despite using a wheelchair. Last winter, Ira spoke to Trail Tales, the event put on by Alaska Trails, about how he was preparing with his hand cycle for the Boston Marathon.
Hi, I'm Ira Edwards. I used to run a lot on trails. Up in the mountains, trail running in the woods, crawling through swamps. Trained a lot for marathons. A really common trail run of mine was to run from McHugh Creek parking lot to Campbell Creek Science Center parking lot over the mountains. So that was a weekly thing in the summer. So, you know, it's like 30 miles or so, but it was a fun trip. Beautiful terrain. I was a fair weather guy. If the weather was bad, we'd do it another day. But yeah, and sorry, I just lost my voice last week, so it's 99% back. But yeah, I broke my back in 2010 working on fixing up some ski trails. Got crushed by a tree, spent almost 5 months in the hospital. That was a life-changing experience. I'm a lot shorter than I am. Not quite 6'5 anymore. But yeah, so I don't run, obviously, so now we have hand cycles. For those of you that aren't familiar with what a hand cycle is, it's basically a bicycle, but it's got three wheels, and I pedal with my arms. And that allowed me to get around and go do all kinds of fun things. Started off with a mountain bike hand cycle. It let me get all over the trails here. I rode up to Rabbit Lake 1 year. I've done Lost Lake on my hand cycle. That was really, really hard. The first try didn't work out so well. I had to have friends carry it across the bridges, and we used a block and tackle to get me up the cliffs. But yeah, so it was just more just tooling around and adventuring, and I used to be a fairly competitive athlete. So I, 2012, a couple years after getting hurt, talked to the guys at Skinny Raven and saw if they thought it would be okay if I raced in their Twilight 12K. The Twilight 12K is a super fun race. You finish with pizza and beer. I mean, what better reason is there to run? But yeah, so they were all for it. We started me with all the runners, and I accelerate really slow, so they all ran around me, and I tried not to run anyone over so far we didn't get hurt. Every race after that, we've worked with Skinny Raven, and they've started me ahead of the runners, so it's worked a lot better that way. But that worked out pretty well. It was a real lot of fun, and of course I drank pizza and beer. And so I decided I should try to do marathons. I've run a couple dozen marathons before I got hurt, and it was not like my life's goal to win the Boston Marathon or win the Olympics, but I was a competitive Clydesdale guy. I mean, I'm 6'5", 230, 240 pounds. So I broke 3 hours before. That's not like world class, but you know. So a bike is a lot faster. I'll just say that. It's a lot easier. I mean, it's still a lot same energy output. But yeah, so in 2013, I signed up for the Mayor's Marathon. And that was kind of a fun experience. For those of you that don't run marathons, the Mayor's Marathon starts at Bartlett High School and goes on to military land, goes on the Tank Trail, so it's about 13 miles of dirt roads, gravel roads, and then back onto pavement down the Chester Creek Trail to finish downtown. That is kind of a different thing in itself, because if you're running, you can just run on different surfaces. On a bicycle, mountain bike tires work much better for getting traction going up rocky and dirty hills, and they were really slow on pavement. So we came up with the idea I should do kind of some equipment changes, and I grew up in the Palmer. I'm a redneck from out in the Butte, so we did NASCAR style. I had a bike swap. We did change tires one time, and then we had from a time trial equipment to more air breathable mountain bike type of helmets and goggles, things like that. About that same time, I started a group of helping people with other disabilities called Team Gimp Squad. Right now, it's a team of me, but I go out and tell people life can be fun if you have something life-changing, whether it's a disability or some family matter or things like that. I do things with schools and go to hospitals, visit new patients. but Team Gimp Squad is kind of my outreach program. So with that, since we're going redneck NASCAR style, I got some custom-made embroidered Dickies work shirts with all my sponsor logos on them, custom-embroidered trucker hats, and we all wore jorts, jean shorts. I thought one of my friends that was here was going to be, I'm not sure if he's here tonight, but anyway, I had a guy bike with me on the trail there, and for sports nutrition, marathons are kind of different. You don't want to really spike your blood sugar. You want to kind of keep things going. So I had a Camelback with water. I'd have some energy gels in case I got low blood sugar. But he carried a backpack with a six-pack of MGD screw top bottles. They were filled with yellow sports drink. So my friends and all the other sports clubs, they've run all the other feed stations. They knew I was not really drinking beer. But the shock value of all the other spectators was pretty cool to pound a beer at every feed station. Anyway, so marathon racing was kind of fun. I got to do it again. The physical output is probably the same caloric burn as you guys if you ran a marathon. I was not quite as physically tired because I got done faster. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And after a couple of marathons, I got a grant and got a road racing hand cycle. So the NASCAR bike swap actually was a bike swap instead of just an equipment swap. And got that from the Challenge Athletes Foundation, a program they have for disabled law enforcement. And I was hurt while I was law enforcement. And first responders, firefighters, things like that. And so, yeah, I have a bike now. And I decided I raced the Humpies Marathon a couple years ago and thought this was going to be fun. I should try for Boston Marathon. So the Boston Marathon has been my goal for the last few years, just to get that going. I'd run it once, but it's kind of like the epitome of all the marathons you can run. I see Matthias is here. He's run quite a few of them, and there's a bunch of Alaskans that run them pretty much every year if they can. It's a fun trip, beautiful place, and it's a big event. It's probably one of the larger marathons in the country, and it definitely is hard to get into if you're a runner. If you're a hand cyclist, it's almost impossible because if you're not a Boston bombing victim and if you're not a disabled veteran, there's only six spots available. So I had to both qualify and be randomly selected for one of those six spots. So it's kind of hokey that even if I were the world champion and Olympic medalist in marathon, which I'm not, you may not get into the race. Where if you're the fastest runner, you get into the race. But yeah, so the marathon training has been kind of fun that way. Did the Humpies Marathon that year in 2016 and qualified. It was great. Unfortunately, I could not apply to get into the Boston Marathon. I got a bison permit, and if anyone here hunts or fishes, it's one of those one things you don't really get very often. It only took me 32 years, so I'm nothing if not persistent. My season, my week to go out hunting was the middle of October, which is when they allowed the disabled athletes to apply, and I figured I can always apply again. I will probably not get a bison tag again. So 2016 didn't really work to get into the 2017 marathon because I was hunting and there was no cell service. I got a bison too, so yep. Only guy in a wheelchair to ever get a wild bison. There's been game farm bison yet. But I doubled down my efforts and spent all of last year and the year before that training. And so I did the Mayor's Marathon, I did Humpies Marathon, I did the Kenai Marathon. All of those I did really good times in. And got in this year. For those of you that aren't familiar with marathons are mostly type 2 fun. There's three types of fun. There's type 1 fun, which everyone calls fun. Type 2 fun is kind of miserable sometimes, and you get to tell good stories about it. Type 3 fun, you really never want to do that again. So this last year's Kenai Marathon, I thought was going to be awesome. It's all flat. There's like 200 feet of hills. And I figured I did it on a training run last summer in an hour 40. I'm like, I can do it in an hour 20 if I race hard. It was 40 degrees and raining hard on race day. End of September, and that was not really fun. I cramped up, and I finished like in 2 hours and 5 minutes, like 40 minutes slower than my training run during the summer. It was still fast enough to qualify for Boston Marathon on top of my other ones. So I applied to get in, and I randomly got in. Randomly because there's only six spaces available to non-veterans and non-bombing victims. And honestly, the bombing victims should get in because they had a rough go at things. Marathon racing is quite a bit different. Like I said, it ends up being a little bit faster. The winning times for these things are usually an hour and a half or so versus around 2 hours for a regular marathon runner, because I have gears, I can pedal. Uphills are really, really slow. If any of you guys have run into local races going out of Westchester Lagoon, women with walkers and their baby strollers go up that hill out of Westchester faster than I can bike up it. But yeah, downhills are really fast. Training has been a lot of different things. I do a lot of strength training. I Nordic ski a lot in the winter, so that's a lot of double pulling like this. I've got my bike on a fluid trainer, just a bike trainer in the living room, so it takes up a lot of space, but it gives me an incentive to hop onto it if I see it all the time. And then, I'm excited to go to Boston this year, see what I can do there. And the best part is I'm losing Christmas, so Christmas is a lot farther gone than it was a couple months ago. And I will be looking really good, like Nacho Libre said, Jack Black. I'll be having some fantastic stretchy pants.
That was Ira Edwards speaking to Trail Tales, the event put on by Alaska Trails. You can learn more about them at a link you'll find on our site at outdoorexplorer.org. My next guest is Adam Baldwin, who works at the Anchorage Museum. He's the Director of Community Partnerships and Outreach. And this is Outdoor Explorer. You wouldn't normally think we'd be talking to somebody from the museum, which is typically your indoor destination for when it's raining or something. But the Anchorage Museum is changing a lot. I don't know if you've been to it recently. It's really exciting to see all the modernization and the new ways that the museum is relating to the community. And some of that involves outdoor activity. So decided to have Adam in to talk about some of that. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So, to start with, you have actually formal activities during the summer that folks can get involved with and sort of go around town and sort of use the city as your museum, more or less, right?
Absolutely. We have really tried to expand programming for locals outside of our four walls. And that way, I think that it keeps a larger connection to the city year-round instead of it just being in the winter or a rainy day destination. We have a great program called Lunch on the Lawn, which is every Tuesday. And it's a free program where we have food trucks and we have musicians come and play. And it really has developed into a really exciting family-friendly program where it's just kids and picnic blankets and some lawn games. And, you know, we have this beautiful, beautiful lawn out front, and people just weren't using it in the way that I think the architect intended. And so we thought, mm-hmm. Well, let's be more intentional and program around it. So that's a great time on Tuesdays, June through August.
So it's sort of a picnic.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so what kind of programming do you have there?
Well, we'll be having local artists mostly doing performances, and then we usually do some science demos out there that are relevant. Sometimes we partner with the National Parks Service. And then obviously we have a few kind of hidden surprises in July about some performances that are going to be incorporating dance and other elements of art forms that we don't usually have for these. So.
Cool. Well, we're pretty well into the summer by this point, but it sounds like you've also got some stuff where you're kind of using the community and leading people on sort of more formal kind of deals. And I'm not sure exactly what all those are.
Well, there's a few of them. There's our bike tours that we do the second Thursday of each month, and they're themed in different ways. They're a partnership with our good friends over at Bike Anchorage. And what they are is at 5:30, they usually take about 2.5 hours, and they're themed in different ways. And the one in August is about public gardens and sort of urban food security and those kind of issues that are coming up more and more.
So that's like a big crowd of people on bikes turning around Anchorage?
On a sunny day, we'll probably get about 60 people.
Wow.
And even on a rainy day, we usually get 10 to 15. And so, yeah, they're a lot of fun. We don't bike fast, but people have to know that they're going to bike probably pretty far. It's usually, 3 to 8 miles, depending on the particulars of that tour.
Wow. So then there's a docent who's like, you will have a stop and then give a little lecture or something?
Yeah. Mostly it's me doing the programming. Okay. And so it's the things that I do research
for. Well, you've got a loud voice, so that should work.
Yes, I do. And they're often iterations of ones that we've done previous years, but they're never exactly the same. So like the architecture one, sometimes we focus on different elements of architecture, but, trying to let people understand and really appreciate their community better is our goal.
So we don't really think of Anchorage as being like an architecture mecca. In fact, we've been received some pretty harsh criticism on that count. What are some of the buildings that you look at?
Well, we talk about sort of the techniques and materials that were used in sort of post-war construction and the elements of brutalism, which isn't usually considered a elegant method, and then kind of highlighting some of the new spaces that are around town, you know, some of the new office buildings and houses and small sort of clustered dwelling projects that people are doing. There's some really exciting stuff happening architecturally in the town that you might not be aware of, and so highlighting that and then also kind of suggesting how architecture, you know, literally changes the face of a city, but also can improve life.
Huh, cool. And then the garden thing, I guess, would not be that didactic. You're just looking at pretty gardens.
Yeah, and kind of show that, you know, having food and cultivation of food in the city is something that we do. And it's something that I think more and more people are interested in having an element of that in their regular life. And so I think it's an exciting time. Plus, you know, the history of the municipal garden is an interesting one. And so we're going to go by there and get a little bit of what they're doing over at the greenhouse.
Uh-huh. Neat. So talk a little bit about the philosophy of this and why this is something that's important for the museum to do, because obviously if we went back 10 years ago, this wasn't something that was happening there, I don't think.
It's funny that you say 10 years, because that's how long I've been with the museum.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And yeah, it has changed, but I think that people, when I meet them in the public sphere, often people are like, oh, I'm not really a museum person. And I think that we've somehow pigeonholed the idea that the only people who go to museums are people that, you know, read every bit of label copy or stare at a difficult piece of artwork for 20 minutes. And that's
sipping Chardonnay and standing, you know, that crowd.
Yes. And our old addiction to vocal jazz for every activity that we would do. but we've gotten away from that, thank goodness. And so, you know, we're trying to find elements of the community that I think is interesting. And by doing these things outside of our walls, we're also showing that the community is ones that also create content for us. Mm-hmm. And so people might not think of themselves as a content creator, but maybe unwittingly they are. And so really kind of sharing those stories and have it be more of an exchange of ideas and information rather than it just be so, as you said, didactic.
Right. So it sounds like you're kind of trying to break down the wall, including the wall between the inside and the outside of the museum.
Absolutely. You know, I feel that we are lucky that the museum is as well supported in the community as it is, but I think that continue to do that and still try to reach more and more audiences, try to make ourselves more relevant so that people can enjoy what the museum has to offer and you know, in a small way, bring up the quality of life that mm-hmm. we have here in Anchorage.
And you're still doing the camps for kids and all that?
Yep, we still do summer camps. They're pretty exciting. We do them all in-house nowadays. We used to do them down the street, and it's a very popular element. You know, summer camps, what to do with your kids when they're not in school is always a big issue.
Absolutely.
So they're quite popular. And we, you know, obviously try to do museum themed ideas. You know, so we have ones about art, and we have ones about robotics and computers and things of that nature. So, mm-hmm. you know, trying to kind of double down on the work that we're already doing.
Cool. So then going into the fall and winter, there's still more stuff happening. And it's probably a little early to like dive down into the dates because people would forget them by now.
Sure.
But in terms of, I think we tend to like hunker down and not sort of think about stuff that's happening outdoors and in town. We you know, go skiing or something, but you still have other stuff happening. No?
Absolutely. You know, starting in September, we start our program of polar nights where we're open late on Fridays, all Fridays. Mm-hmm. And so most of that program has to do with music and film. It's geared towards sort of young professionals and a little bit more experimental. And that's mm-hmm. been a lot of chances for us to kind of tease out a lot of our programming. And that's really exciting. And I think that we're going to have even more music in the building this fall. That's going
to
be fun.
Yeah, and it's been cool to watch, like, as the museum has reached out to different age groups, different, like you're saying, the indoor and the outdoor, maybe mm-hmm. sort of like getting away from being sort of the upper middle class hangout to being something that's open for everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in November, we're doing a Wilderness Week, which is really exciting. Part of it's tied to a deinstallation of a major work by John Grade, where he has this life-size Pingo that's in our atrium. It's being installed right now. And then part of it's the 100th anniversary of Rockwell Kent.
What's a Pingo?
A Pingo is a geologic formation of ice and dirt that happens in the Arctic, these big mounds. Mm-hmm. And so John Garrade built this massive one. It's over 40 feet long and has an augmented reality goggle part to it. And it's a really stunning piece. And I'm really excited to see it actually be installed this week.
We're pre-recording so that by the time people hear this, they can go down and see it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It'll be there through November 3rd. So please come down and check it out. So all those first Fridays.
So then in November, he'll be taking it apart and you make an event out of that.
Yeah, and so we'll be doing an event about that and talking about Rockwell Kent's 100th anniversary of his time on Fox Island. And so that's a really exciting time for us to kind of celebrate the artistic history of Alaska. And then we'll be doing a major, major event in November where we're going to have hip-hop artists from Greenland that are a part of a film that we're making called We Up. Band The Cave Singers from Seattle is going to be playing, and as is Medium Build. It's going to be a really exciting, big, big event in November. So.
Wow, that is something to look forward to. So one thing you mentioned was that the museum, when it was expanded, was designed with this sort of public outdoor space. And you said something went by quickly was you said, well, it hadn't been used the way that was intended, so we're trying to repurpose that and find more ways to use it.
Mm-hmm.
What was the original, and what's the vision now?
Well, I think there was a little bit of a if you build it, they will come mm-hmm. thought to it. But when all that new ground went in, we had to not do a lot of program early on it because the trees and the grass needed to take root.
Wow. Yeah.
So we intentionally didn't do anything. And then I think people just got used to not spending time out there.
Kind of an empty square. And there's already the park strip is not that far off. So if people looking for a place just to be outdoors, mm-hmm. there's other places. Yeah.
And so by doing programs on the lawn, you know, really trying to draw attention to it and make it more thought of as public park space. And, you know, there's some really nice public art that's right in that square too. Mm-hmm. So there's some Rochelle Doughty sculptures and all that. So
yeah. And there was that really cool thing. It was done several years ago now with projecting on the wall of the museum and having the dancers that were hanging down. Is there a projector there in the square?
There is, and using it for programming this winter is going to be really exciting. Obviously, for the most part, the one that you spoke about was the Light Brigade, and that was on
that was a one-off.
Yeah, the fall equinox. And so between the equinoxes, we have the opportunity. It's just simply too light in the summer to use it otherwise, even though it's pretty powerful projector. But we're really excited about some of the things that we're going to be able to do to show images and concepts and bring more art to the facade of the building.
And that's a nice winter city feeling when everybody's standing out and they're all bundled up and there's some outdoor thing going on in the wintertime.
Indeed.
Yeah.
You know, I think we fully embrace the concept of there's no bad weather, only bad clothes.
So. Yeah. Great. Well, thanks so much, Adam. I've really enjoyed hearing about all this and getting me a little bit excited about the museum.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to let us talk about all the exciting things that we have at the museum.
Sure. Adam Baldwin is the Director of Community Partnerships and Outreach at the Anchorage Museum.
That's all for Outdoor Explorer. Thanks to Leah and Anna Boltz and Beth Nordland, who are with us to talk about inclusive playgrounds, Ira Edwards in Trail Tales, and Adam Baldwin from the Anchorage Museum. As always, you'll find links to learn more at outdoorexplorer.org. Our producer on Outdoor Explorer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer is Hannah Duro. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.